Hubbard puts up a 3-point shot and he nails it.
Super Wednesday is ours.
And it's in! Fantastic!
All 33,000 students at the University of Nottingham, they know what this means.
This is URN Sport.
We're going to start off first by talking, of course, about the England versus Scotland game. Happened last night, 7:45 kickoff. Final score was 3-0. Did any of you guys watch that game?
Yeah, I watched it.
What did you make of it?
I was in Mooch. To be honest, I thought we were pretty decent as far as England versus Scotland can go. Three kind of average goals. The midfield was average. I mean, Lallana was the best player on the pitch there by miles. But, I mean, defence didn't look world class. As it never does.
Again, this is it. I mean, there's always been a sort of stigma around England, and, you know, we always seem to do well in the qualifying games, but when it comes to big tournaments, we always seem to, I wouldn't say messed up, but we always sort of succumb to pressure from the media and just in general the football world. You know, everyone expects a lot from England. Last night, we played well. We were let off by Scotland because Scotland had many chances to go ahead, to, you know, bring themselves back into the game, and they failed to take them, whether it be via a good bit of defending from us or a good bit of keeping from Joe Hart. It wasn't the best England performance, was it, Connor?
It wasn't. I think England were pretty average last night from what I saw. They had three shots on target and they scored from all three of them, and all three of them were admittedly very good headers, but there was nothing else really that of note that I would say we really created in terms of chances. If I'm honest, Scotland probably had the better of the chances. You look at the one where Lee Griffiths only need to play a short pass over to Snodgrass, who would have been in on goal. There was another one where Forrest got into the box and probably should have done a lot better and hit the target. If Scotland had taken those chances, it would have been a much more tight, much more difficult game, and it would have looked a lot worse for Gareth Southgate and the team.
Would have been more exciting as well.
Oh, absolutely.
It was quite dull at some points. Also, Sterling missed an absolute
six. Yeah, I remember that. It was awful. Yeah, I mean, it did bounce up, and you've got to give him benefit of the doubt. You know, it was coming at him fast, but again,
that was Carnu style.
For £49 million,
you'd expect him to be putting that in the back of the net.
He should be putting that in the back of the net. You know, we talk about the price of Sterling has probably been covered so many times before, but even so, you know, I would expect myself to score that chance, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not much of a goal scorer myself, but I would probably be putting that one in the back of the net. But yeah,
well, that says everything.
Just a couple of stats here. You know, England dominate possession. It was about 70 to 30%. Scotland, however, did have slightly more shots than England. But, you know, like you said, Connor, we had three shots on target, and those three shots all resulted in goals. Which, again, if really at the end of the day, you know, you can go through as many of the stats as you want, but, you know, the goals at the end of the day really count. And just quickly, I want to talk about one of the issues that we are going to be discussing about England. Wayne Rooney, you know, he's not performing well at Man United at the moment. Granted, he's not being given a chance to play well. He's sort of undergone a bit of a slip in form, shall we say, and, you know, he still finds himself as the captain of England and in the starting 11. Do we think that he should just step up and say, you know what, guys, I'm getting on a bit now, I'm just going to want to focus on my club career? Or do we still think that there is something more that Wayne Rooney can give this England side?
I think there is something that Rooney can do for the side. I think, personally, I wouldn't have Rooney in my first 11. I think that the role that Rooney can play as one of the senior members in the team is a similar sort of role that players like Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard was playing towards the end of their careers, especially Frank Lampard, who wasn't playing quite often but was often still in the team. It's a situation where you help to develop the younger players that are coming through, and I think Rooney would be very good, and he's matured into a player that would be able to do that. And it's a similar role to the one he's doing at Man United at the moment. For me, I would rather have players like Lallana, Henderson, Dele Alli, Eric Dier in the middle of midfield as opposed to Wayne Rooney. I think in terms of the pace on counter-attacks and sort of pace on the break, England, Rooney slows him down. You know, he wants to be in charge. He wants to kind of take control and play those Hollywood passes. If you've got people like Lallana, Dele Alli, who can shift the ball quickly, with players like Rooney and Vardy in front of them and Sturridge, who are all pacey strikers, I think it will bring more to the team and make England a more potent threat if he wasn't in that team at that time.
I think we also have to remember that Rooney, since the age of 16, has been playing not less than 40 games a season. So over 14 years, that's about 500 games he's played in his career. And, you know, that takes an extreme toll, physically and mentally. Yes, you know, the mental side of his game develops, but the body, like, say, that we saw in a lot of female tennis players, you just kind of burn out a bit. I think possibly we could relate this back to the lack of a winter break in the Premiership. and maybe that would do him would have done him a lot of good.
Do you think that that is something that would not only benefit the Premier League as a whole, but the England football team? Do you think that that is something that maybe the English FA should be looking at to maybe implement?
Look who is top of the world. Okay, it is the German national football team, who has got the best quality team, you know, the best quality European team. Arguably, it's Bayern Munich. And, you know, what do they have? They have a winter break. All of their players are really well rested. I mean, they also have a very good academy system, much better than... And all of their young players do get game time. But still, I'd say that the winter break, it's, you know, it applies to us as well as students. You need a break to rest and recuperate.
I'm inclined to disagree with you, mate.
Okay.
Because, and the reason is, when English teams, not so much England national team, we'll get onto them in a second, but when English teams were dominating in the Champions League, not having a winter break was actually seen as an advantage as opposed to a disadvantage. Because what would happen is, when you come into the round of 16 of the Champions League, or the round of 16 of Europa League or UEFA Cup, whatever it was at that time, you'd have teams coming back from this break not as sharp as the English teams, and they would absolutely race through the last 16. And suddenly you've got three teams in quarterfinals. Often two of the English teams will play each other, and suddenly there's immediately an English team in the semi-final, and it all looks a lot rosier. In that period, sort of, late noughties, I suppose I'm going to have to call it, sort of 2005 to 2010, when we had a team in the semi-final pretty much every season, the winter break was seen as a positive. There was none of this debate about, oh, should we have a winter break? This has only come about because the level of quality in the Premier League has gone down. I feel like the winter break, English football has been played across Christmas and across winter, sort of throughout the Premier League era, if we're going to talk about that. I don't think we can use it as an excuse at this point.
But a lot of the physical pressures on players have increased, especially over the last 10 years. Players are putting a lot more in the gym, okay? That is really degrading to the body over a period of time. And I think, you know, when you've been in the gym, you get your muscle soreness. This is what happens on a macro scale to players if you've been playing for, you know, 9 months solid, putting in 45 games a season, as we've seen with a lot of our top players.
I don't know whether it would benefit us or not. I think maybe having a trial period, I'm not sure how you have a trial period of a winter break. It might do us a bit of good, but just to see if it works, see how rested our players are. We've had a text in. Wayne Rooney has the potential to be one of the best central midfielders in the world. He has the fitness, the range of pass, and the shooting ability to play a similar role to Steven Gerrard. Plus, when you have his ability in a dead ball situation, it adds a lot to the side, as we saw against Scotland. Do you think that he is, you know, obviously he's being pulled back further and further down the pitch as he's getting older? Is that
Dion Dublin style?
Is that a move that you think is beneficial to him and the England side, or do you think that he should be playing as a player who just plays behind the striker?
Well, he's better than Jordan Henderson in the central midfield role, I'd say, for England anyway, because he was pants, to put it mildly, against Scotland, and also kind of consistently.
And Rooney was fantastic against Scotland.
He wasn't, but, you know, if you're going to compare the players, I would back Rooney over Hendo, definitely in the qualifiers. I mean, on the biggest stage, we're going to need a more defensive-focused player, but if you're playing the likes of Malta and Scotland, no offence, but they're not very good.
So if we're talking about that quarterback role, which Rooney's going to take up, who would you take out of the England side? Jordan Henderson?
Yeah, definitely.
We are going to be talking a bit about now, obviously, the whole controversy that was surrounding the England versus Scotland game last night. Both teams decided to go against the FIFA rulings, saying that they weren't allowed to wear poppies on their armbands last night, but both of them did, and now both sides are facing threats of fines or points deductions. The FIFA rules state that kits must be free from commercial, personal, political, or religious messages. Now, guys, what did you make of this whole story? Do you think that the teams were right in going against the FIFA ruling, or do you think that maybe the England camp should have, the England and Scottish camp rather, should have both, you know, just abided by the rules and not have worn the poppies on their armbands?
It's a tough one for me. I mean, the issue is the poppies become such a symbol of remembrance, especially around this time, that it's for a lot of people, and in a lot of situations it's actually distorted into more than it perhaps should have been. It is what we would consider a political symbol, in inverted commas. It can be construed in that direction. So the FIFA have rules in place for that sort of thing, and they told Scotland and England supposedly that they would be in breach of these rules, and England and Scotland decided to do it. So they will just have to face the consequences. Personally, you know, if it's just a small fine, to be honest, England and Scotland can probably pay it. It's probably worth the mark of respect if they wanted to give it. So,
I personally completely agree with FIFA here. I think that the poppy is a political symbol. It's not... If every country in the world had the 11th of November as their day of remembrance for those who have died in the war, then I don't think that it would be an issue. However, it is just a British thing to have the poppy. So it is therefore a political symbol, and, you know, it's fine under the FA, you know, in the Premiership teams, they mark it. All the players have their kits with the poppy embroidered on it. But in an international games, we have to abide by FIFA's rules. And I think that FIFA are completely right in saying that we can't make an exception, because otherwise it will set a dangerous precedent. And I think that is completely correct.
Just on that, did we know... I don't think France wore any particular symbol yesterday to commemorate the Paris attacks. Do we know?
I'm not too sure. I don't think they did. Obviously, yeah, it was 1 year on from the Paris attacks. And, I mean, they would have had every right to maybe have some kind of remembrance on display.
I think they had a minute's silence.
They had a minute's silence, yes.
Which is fair enough. Yeah. I think that there's no problems there.
But, I mean, if France, about a tragedy which happened, you know, a year ago...
Yeah.
Have sort of abided by the rules and have observed their minute silence and then get on with the act of playing football, it throws into sort of a different light the situation in regards to England and Scotland.
Especially if you look at the bile, quite frankly, that was spewed out by some of the less prestigious newspapers that exist in this country, saying that it's, you know, desecration of the memory of X and Y and people died, blah blah blah, you know, which I don't particularly agree with. I mean, it's not legal. You don't have to wear a poppy in this country. You know, personally, I did this year. Maybe next year I won't. It is a political symbol, and you wear it when you're trying to make a particular point, highlight a fact of history, which, you know, let's be fair, was a very contentious issue, putting it very mildly. Millions and millions of people died in both wars, and all wars subsequently. So, you know, I think that England and Scotland should accept the ruling, say that, you know, we're not bigger than FIFA. We have to accept the rules.
Well, and without bringing this sports show towards a political debate, even people, I've got a quote here from a surviving World War II veteran who said that he believes that the poppy has actually been co-opted by politicians as a way of sort of justifying current international conflicts, and that the governments should really pay for the consequences of war instead of charities like the Royal British Legion. If you've got someone who is a veteran who is saying that the poppy has been distorted into this inherently political symbol, what does it suggest about the symbol as a whole and how the public view the symbol? Personally, if players want to wear the poppy coming into the stadium, they want to wear it coming out of the stadium, that's absolutely fine. That's their prerogative. The rules are there for FIFA, and they've been put in place for that particular reason. If every single country started doing it and had political symbols and religious symbols, then, you know, if they followed that example, then it's just become a bit of a nightmare, to be quite honest.
The new president of FIFA, Gianni Infantino, believes that allowing British teams to wear the poppy,
it's consistency,
might create a precedent for other nations to break the rules and wear religious symbols, like you say, as well. You know, he's got to be consistent, like you just mentioned.
It's,
you know,
it's consistency of the message.
If he's going to let the British countries do it, then he's got to let other people around the world do it when they're remembering wars that's happened, or whether they're celebrating different events that will affect their life.
We can imagine, like, maybe Israel and or Palestine, that could get very tricky.
Well, Russia. If the USA do qualify for the 2018 World Cup, and, you know, that's the situation.
Well, they might go out at the expense of Mexico, which is delightfully
ironic. Which is
ironic.
A wonderful story. If no one heard, Mexico beat the USA 2-1 yesterday, which is just brilliant.
It's amazing for, obviously, all of these political reasons. But, yeah, just moving on quickly, the Welsh FA has come out and said that it will abide by FIFA's rules, meaning its players would not wear the poppy in their game this evening against Serbia. The Irish FA have also followed Wales by saying that they will not be wearing poppies, with Northern Ireland manager Michael O'Neill quoted as saying, "We didn't feel it was the right thing as an association to violate the regulation." Should they be wearing them? Or do you think that, you know, again, like you say, you know, it's within their own right to turn down the opportunity to wear a poppy during your football game, and you're going to be abiding by the FIFA rules.
To be honest, it's all a much ado about nothing. It's all a massive, massive debacle about saying that, really, you know, as much as a poppy is a symbol of commemoration, you know, people are allowed to commemorate and remember in sort of in their own personal way. There's no issue with that. And I think if England and Scotland had chosen not to wear the poppy, or just worn black armbands without the poppy on it, or just observed a couple of minutes silence or a minute silence to start the game, there would be no story. Because they decided to defy the rules, it's become something so much bigger than it probably should have been. And it's actually, for me, taken away from the actual message of commemoration. It's making it into something much more of an issue, and it's taking it towards a political situation.
And also keeping sport free from politics, which, although impossible, is something that FIFA and the Olympic Committee especially try to do.
This is URN. The Sports Show.